Kat, thank you. You're listening to The Naked Scientist. It's Chris Smith and Kat Arney. We're talking this week about brain science and how we can delve into the workings of the brain. And as we've discussed, MRI scanners have helped us to make huge advances in our understanding of how brains are structured and what they actually do. And, as we've just heard, how they can go wrong. But what does an MRI scanner have in common with a maglev, that's a levitating train? Here's Miracentha Lingam to explain.
This week on Naked Engineering, we're going to be looking into superconductivity. So what better place to come along to find out about this than the Bulk Superconductivity Lab in the Engineering Department here at the University of Cambridge. Now, Dave is here with me, of course. Tell us a bit about this phenomenon.
Well, it's all to do with conductivity, which is, of course, how easy it is to push electricity through a material. Things like copper are very good conductors, and things like plastics can be very bad conductors, or good insulators. Now, this was actually a really bizarre effect, which was discovered by Kamerling Onnes in 1911. He was measuring the resistance of, it happened to be mercury, and all of a sudden the resistance went to zero, so the conductivity became infinite, which is absolutely bizarre. It's a bit like friction completely disappearing. It's not something you'd ever expect to happen.
And joining us this week is David Cardwell, the Professor of Superconducting Engineering at the University of Cambridge. You've actually got a fascinating demonstration set up here in front of us to show this lack of resistance or superconductivity in action.
Right, we've got a bulk superconductor. So this superconducts at liquid nitrogen temperature, so the nitrogen's bubbling away there. Liquid nitrogen temperature is 77 Kelvin, which is minus 196 degrees C, so it's pretty cold. What we're going to do is bring the superconductor, which is in a superconducting state, which means it doesn't have any of this resistance that Dave's been talking about. We're going to bring it over the magnet. That will actually expose the material to a changing magnetic field. That will induce currents in the superconductor, and those currents will generate its own magnetic field, which will interact with the field that we're using to magnetise it. It all sounds pretty complicated, but the net result of that is that the superconductor will levitate almost magically above the magnet in a very stable way when we do this demonstration.
What is the superconductor actually made of?
Well, it's a fairly complex mix of elements. So this one's yttrium, barium, copper and oxygen. It's got the form and consistency of a standard ceramic, so it's hard and brittle, but with this unique property that it loses its resistance to the flow of current at this very well-defined temperature. It's about 90 Kelvin. We make it at high temperatures, as we do all ceramics, but this is just very special in that it's got these very unique superconducting properties.
Well, as you mentioned, it's been cooling away for a while now. There's a magnet just next to it, so are we ready to place it on top?
Okay, so here's the superconductor. We're putting it onto the magnet, and you can see the superconductor is now levitating above the magnet. There's a good centimetre air gap there. The superconductor is now warming up because it's in the atmosphere. Obviously, it's not in liquid nitrogen anymore. When it gets to its superconducting transition temperature, which is about 90 Kelvin, it'll lose its superconductivity, the currents will stop flowing, and it will just sink down to the magnet.
Ooh, and it's just gone.
Yeah, so the superconductivity disappeared in the material.
Now, Dave, why is this superconductor levitating?
A large part of it goes back to some basic physics discovered by Faraday in the 19th century. This is something you might have done at school. So what I've got here is a coil of wire, which is quite a good conductor, rigged up to a voltmeter, and a big magnet. If I put the magnet through the coil of wire, something rather beautiful happens to the meter.
The voltage is changing.
Yep. In fact, it's not just changing, it's being created. When the magnet moves near this coil of wire, you induce a voltage which pushes a current around the wire, which the meter picks up. This current can be used for all sorts of things. It's how a generator works, so all the electricity is generated like this. But in this case, what we've got is a very similar setup. You've got a magnet and a conductor. So if we move some magnets near some other conductors, so I think, David, you've got a nice demo here.
We have a copper tube here, and we have two samples. We've got a copper sample, which is non-magnetic. When I drop the copper sample down the tube, nothing will happen because there's no changing field, so it'll be like it's just falling through normal free space. So if I'm going to drop this down now, and you'll see it falls down immediately.
That moved down pretty quickly.
Yeah. So now I have a stack of neodymium boron iron magnets. There are four magnets. It's a small sphere, basically, a small cylinder. And I'm going to do exactly the same experiment.
So the moving magnet's going to create a voltage, it's going to create a big current, and a big current flowing in a circle is an electromagnet, which should hold up this magnet.
So the magnet's going to move down a lot slower then?
Right.
OK, so it's just going through, and it's moving a lot slower.
Yes, that's right. So this voltage is induced, as Dave said, the current flows. That current generates a field. That interacts with the magnet as it falls down and impedes its progress. So it takes a lot longer to kind of decrease.
And it's just come out now.
And, of course, the only reason why it's dropping is because there's a resistance in this copper. So these induced currents slowly die away, so it has to drop a bit more to build up another one. If the copper was a perfect conductor, like a superconductor, there'd be no reason for those currents to die away.
So it would just stay at the top of the tube?
Yeah, it would just drop a little bit, induce enough currents to support itself, and it would levitate like we were doing earlier.
But now, the levitation itself that you showed earlier, David, isn't as straightforward as simply just putting the magnet on and it just stays there, is it? There's a stable and unstable way of doing this.
Right, yeah, these materials have yet more secrets to reveal. If we look at the microstructure, it has what we call pinning centres. And what pinning centres do is resist the motion of magnetic flux in the material. So when we try to get magnetic field into the superconductor, it's difficult to do so. So we have to apply a force, we have to apply energy. But when field is in there, when magnetic flux lines are in the material, they don't want to come out.
And what are these flux lines then exactly?
So the flux lines are individual flux quanta that exist in the material and define the magnetic field in a superconductor. When field enters superconductors, it does so in the form of individual lines of magnetic flux, and it's these individual lines that we can stop moving by these pinning centres. And if we can do that, this gives rise to stable levitation. When the field is in there, it doesn't want to leave. So it actually combines itself with the magnet that's providing that flux. So the superconductor, the magnet and the air gap effectively become as one.
OK, so let's see the unstable way in action.
So here I'm just putting the superconductor on top of the magnet, so it's levitating away there. If I just apply a sideways force to the superconductor, no resistance whatsoever, unstable levitation.
Okay. So now what are you going to do to make that stable?
Right, so I'm going to do exactly the same thing. So I'm going to cool the superconductor down, which I'm doing now. I'm going to put it on the magnet, so it's levitating again. I'm now pressing the superconductor down onto the surface of the magnet, so now flux is penetrating the superconductor.
Oh, and it appears to just be locked in now.
Yeah, absolutely. It looks like it's levitating again as the first case, but now we've got stable levitation, so I can turn the whole thing upside down as well.
That's incredible. So you've turned the magnet on its side now. You're now turning it upside down, and the magnet is just not separating. It's still maintaining that gap, levitating about, what, a centimetre's gap off the magnet.
So we've got stable levitation, we've got stable suspension, the whole system is stable. And this forms the basis of things like magnetic levitation or suspension, things like the railways that we see quite often on the television.
And now, Dave, one, say, more well-known application is the use of these superconductors in MRI scanners, so magnetic resonance imaging.
Yeah, these are probably one of the biggest uses of superconductors today. They're actually using a much older fashion form of superconductor, a low-temperature superconductor, which only works at liquid helium temperatures, only about 4 degrees above absolute zero, or minus about 269 degrees centigrade. These basically use the superconductor to produce a huge magnetic field, which affects the way the nuclei in your body interact with radio waves. You can then change these magnetic fields a lot and do a huge amount of complicated computer processing and work out what you look like inside. This is producing a 3D picture of your body, and unlike X-rays, which are very good at seeing bones and hard parts of your body, an MRI scan is very good at seeing the squishy bits, which doctors find very, very useful.
And now, David, though, most MRI scanners that you see in hospitals, they're large, they're very costly. But with your work, David, you're actually looking into low-resolution MRI, which could have perhaps a wider range of applications.
Yeah, the idea is that if we can use bulk high-temperature superconductors to generate large magnetic fields, although those fields won't be as stable as the fields needed for these very high-resolution scans that we described earlier, what we may be able to do is to develop an instrument that is accessible and very cheap. So it would be open. We may be able to do, rather than an MRI image, we could do a spectrum scan. So, for example, we could look at a knee, we could look at selected spectra, and use that as a diagnostic tool. These would be very low-cost devices, obviously low resolution, but one could imagine these being deployed in every doctor's surgery for very quick diagnosis of some fairly simple joint issues or even base of head issues. So that's one potential use of these materials, but there are many others. Other things like motors and generators, using bulk material you can get rid of some of the iron, so you can make much lighter, much smaller motors and generators. Things like magnetic levitators for trains. And I think the next 5 to 10 years are going to be revolutionary in terms of real applications of these materials.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much, David, and Dave, of course. That's it for Naked Engineering for this week. But who knows, you may see one of David Cardwell's low-resolution MRI scanners in your GP's soon.
Mirasen Thillingham and Dave Ansell talking with Cambridge University engineer David Cardwell about the science of superconductivity. Naked Engineering is produced with support from the Royal Academy of Engineering's Ingenious Grant Programme.